All right, Dieter,
Joe.
Jake, Santa Clara, California. And John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan just spoke to the media for about 33
Which
minutes
is us.
that we are the media.
We are in the media.
So I've heard. A little yes, a little no from me. We got actually some interesting stuff, and then there was a lot of filibustering, for lack of a better word, just using up some time.
Yeah, there was not a lot of specificity towards the
No.
second half of it, but I would say at the start, number one, obviously Brian Schneider's out. Number two,
Right.
Nick Sorensen is gone.
Which
Well,
we knew last
gone.
night, and it was something that has been suggested now for more than a minute, where it was Sorensen was almost acting as an interim defensive coordinator for the entire season.
It
And
was
so they'll
weird,
re
and
they'll
I
reorganize him Bobby Evans style.
one thing I'd wished we'd gotten to was like, was that dynamic uncomfortable? I don't think they would have gotten into that, but like, do they think that dynamic with Brandon Staley as this ghost shadow defensive coordinator, which proved, by the way, the fact that Staley will get an interview as
Right.
their defensive coordinator,
Right.
and then the rest will be outside candidates. So that's notable, and they're trying to keep Sorensen around. So he's not fired, but he will not be their DC.
And I don't think he sticks around.
It's hard to make that transition to go from being DC to.
He does seem like a guy who can handle that. He does seem like a lifer, a career
Right.
guy. But that's not important anymore because he's not in an important job anymore, and his influence on this team has gone from significant to
Yeah.
behind the scenes at best. He's
Yeah.
out. We knew they were going to make a change of special teams coordinator. Kyle did note that they could maybe have Sorensen take that job if he's interested.
Oh, I
You
mi
might have missed that.
Oh,
He's will
yeah.
he be interviewed for the special teams job? Oh yeah, we'd like him to stick around,
Because
and if
I
that's
think he
something he.
started at special teams in his career. A lot of people do. By the way, one of the more notable, interesting parts of this,
Yeah.
maybe not notable, but
Yeah.
Tim Kawakami asked him about special teams, and he's
Right.
like,
The
you
do no
know,
harm
he's like,
aspect.
you don't really have like a love. He's like, what do you mean I
What do you
don't?
mean?
He got defensive and bristled, and then John Lynch jumped in to defend
Right.
Kyle. Because the example he used was about kickers, which is classically like that's one example of many.
Right. I mean,
And
Kyle has openly said he believes in a do no harm approach to
right,
special
I
teams.
just don't
That's
want special teams to harm us.
correct. I mean,
Is
he's on the record. I have all of the printouts.
there
It's
plenty of proof?
highlighted. So there's that. Obviously, we'll talk about special teams coordinator if they make a hire there. The more pressing issue is that they need a defensive coordinator.
Also, sort of a crafty move to avoid having just straight up fired Sorensen, and to get like from his perspective to like, I don't know, it comes off
It
as
comes across as benevolent. What it really comes across as is patronizing in a way. If you were really the defensive coordinator of this team, you'd get straight up fired. You need to leave
it
the
was
building.
weird from the start the way
That's
they
what I'm
set that
saying.
up.
He was like a full-time interim. He was like a temp worker covering the DC job this entire season. And listen, I have given there was ample reason to fire this guy. I think the player stood up for him because he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's a good, decent man, and I don't think they wanted to bury him.
And I don't think he's like a schmuck. I just don't think he was. And the one
No.
thing I will say, one of the few things that we sort of learned in the way Kyle talked about what he's looking for in a defensive coordinator is he really stressed malleability, like flexibility, like a guy that when they don't have the personnel, when it's maybe not perfect, does have the experience. I think he said the experience, the history,
Yes.
sort of the know-how to be able to adapt when those situations are uncomfortable or are trying, because again, they didn't have the personnel. And if you had a great defensive coordinator, like you go to the Cardinals, who had a bad, bad, bad personnel this season, but against the 49ers especially, like they gave him some trouble. They threw man coverage at him, and they said, you know, we're going to mix some things up, even though we don't have the dudes.
Right.
And I think that they, for the most part, emphasized a little bit of a need, and we'll see how much of it's real. But they did emphasize a need to evolve and evaluate their scheme and all that stuff. So that, I mean,
Yeah.
that's what we've been asking, that maybe that's lip service. We'll find out. But that's what they stressed in both how they're going to approach hiring and how they're going to approach this offseason.
It's very difficult to make the argument that Nick Sorensen should have kept his job, not just with the 12 men and not just with a lot of, the issues at hand, but the Campbell situation has to fall on him as well. That's bad communication with the player to where the player has certain listen, it's on Campbell, don't get me wrong, but like the defensive coordinator has to own a little bit of that. He's the one in the rooms with this guy. Linebacker coach has to have some ownage on that. So all of this to say, I agree with you. It did sound, there were a couple words that I wrote down, like more opportunistic this time around as it pertains to hiring a defensive coordinator. Opportunistic. Yeah. They didn't say pragmatism straight up, but I very much
that was the vibe,
garnered
right?
the belief that, hey, we have extra time now. This is an opportunity.
They're really relishing extra time.
And I get it. I wrote halfway through the season. I mean, it was very reminiscent of the end of the 2019 NBA Finals where Steve Kerr goes to Adam Silver and just says, can we take a year off? And then the world ends, so maybe Steve Kerr is an omen of bad things to come.
Yeah.
But when everything went wrong this year, I don't have that much of a problem with sort of packing it all up as one terrible year. We did that in 2020 around here.
Yep.
And it turned out okay. Now, they started like crap in 2021, but they pulled it together.
I don't think there was a way this season would have been successful.
Correct.
They could have won those games that they talked about and been 8-2, but they were never a good team.
No.
They were flawed in a number of ways.
They were big Eagles energy.
And the one thing that, again, that he talked about is like having flexibility, mainly having answers. Having answers and being able to adapt and figure things out when everything doesn't line up right and when you do have injuries. And we wanted more of like, did you feel like the personnel could have been better? And they answered it more about injuries. We didn't get a lot
of... Yeah, and it was a level of defense, and they also were being defensive of each other, which, you know, say what you will, that at least shows that there's a strong connection there. I mean,
who's questioned that?
Well, but it's still important to note.
Yeah.
The locker room didn't go out and say Sorensen's got to go, or they didn't finger point or say, like, hey, a good leader would have done this or that. They were all very professional young to a high age. Even Debo's out there not pointing fingers, you know. And obviously a lot of guys weren't there because they were injured, but, like, I was struck by the professionalism, which has never waned.
Right.
But this would have been a great opportunity to let it all out, especially for a guy like Charvarius Ward or somebody on the way out.
They did point to that, sort of all the different traumas and horrible things that happened as, like, building up the locker room rather than like tearing it down.
But it's going to chip away
right at
the collective soul. But it, to the same point, you know, John and Kyle being very defensive of each other in that environment.
Yep.
Okay. So now at least we know from very public appearances that, you know, Kyle isn't thinking, oh, this is John's fault. He left me with a shit team.
Right.
And John isn't thinking, I gave you a great team and you guys have shitty coaches and now you're on it.
Everyone had a hand in this.
Correct. And I think that they both brought that up a lot. And just because it felt like lip service doesn't mean it's actually not true.
Yeah.
And not to be apologists, right? Like, listen, John and Kyle both have to know, and perhaps this is why they were so defensive. Like, they don't get to hire another defensive coordinator next year. Like, if they're doing this again next year, they're done. And it's not a question on if they get to have a press conference, then they're done at some point in the 2026 season. That's if they get a press conference, right? If they're in the same situation this time next year, they're either out or their seats are so on fire, it's hard to imagine them not being out in the very near future. They get one last go. So they're aware of that. And I appreciate that as well. It was defensiveness, but it was defensiveness towards what I thought were fair and acute questions about, hey, why did your team suck so hard? And they were being defensive of each other because they both understood that everyone had a hand in it.
Which is fair.
Some smaller things. Brock,
Kubiak is
just
the offensive coordinator now, which Kyle just slipped under the radar. He's like, Clay Kubiak has been the offensive coordinator, and he's going to officially get that title going forward. And he said he'll still call plays, which I think everyone would expect.
Yeah.
But Clay Kubiak has apparently been this offensive coordinator the whole time, which is...
Yes, we kind of knew that, and then also, no.
What does that mean?
Well, I think this could be, and I doubt it becomes this, but at least it gives us an opportunity to entertain the possibility that he's going more Andy Reid, and that he's going to empower his underlings a little bit more moving forward. And even if that's not true, I think that's certainly the message he wants to send right now, because he needs to hire some underlings. He needs some people who feel like, okay, I got to move up. And I don't think this is a generational thing at all. I just think that it's a more attractive offer. In the past, you could just say, go to Kyle Shanahan and he'll fix it. He'll turn you into whatever you want. You're going to be a head coach somewhere.
Right.
You're, you're in the system. Well, now the system has so overtaken everything that just going to Kyle isn't there. You can also go to KOC. You can go to Sean McVay. You can go to Matt LaFleur. There's so many places that you can go to sort of get that tutelage that now Kyle has to have a little something more to sell. So I don't think it was Machiavellian in the sense of he's trying to do it, but this is something that I think he wants to push I'm going to give you opportunities. I'm not this autocrat.
They have set the standard, I think, from an organizational perspective, that from the player side, if you become an A-tier player, we pay you.
Yeah.
If you become a coach, you get opportunities elsewhere.
Correct.
So it is a place where you go.
Never mind the fact that we've now fired two defensive coordinators back to back years.
The results will be there. So they're like, you join us, you're investing in your future.
Right.
But they have set that sort of, this is what happens if you succeed here.
But when they're not succeeding, they have to have something more to sell. They have to have something a little bit more attractive.
He did also literally call Schneider the fall guy, which I...
Correct, which he is. He is, because it's special teams will always come down to the roster. And when you are playing as many rookies as they were playing,
which is effectively
as starters,
what they said.
Right. But at the same time, the job of the special teams coordinator is to make something out of what you have.
And if you're do no harm, like, you can't be doing harm. Like, if that's your approach to special teams.
Actively harming.
Right.
And it had been better in recent weeks, to be fair, but that's not saying much.
No.
I mean, it was never good, and it was never something that could help you win games.
They finished decent in return yardage.
Like, Cowan's a good returner. He's fine. But, like, and Debo's a good kick returner, which is about all he'll be next year, because John Lynch said he's coming back, which makes a lot of sense.
One thing, because basically him and Hargrave got the same contract set up where it set them up for post June 1, where, like, Debo seems like a little different.
Right.
They're going to post June 1 Javon Hargrave. Lynch said that, but then they're also going to try and maybe bring him back after that.
I think that's just lip service. That's just him. We're going to re-sign a guy to a lesser contract if he's going to get a lesser contract than the one he just had. Obviously, he did not put
that
in the contract.
Yeah.
But, like, the idea that...
It's one of the worst contracts they've handed out, by far.
Oh, but there's such a long list.
Him and Dee Ford and...
Dee Ford at least gave...
Weston Richburg.
Yeah. This is one of the reasons, and we mentioned it on the show yesterday, like, in a weird way for this team, it'd be better, because they have so many things they need to do with the draft to get younger and cheaper, that the draft should be first for this team and then free agency second.
Yep.
But that's not how it works. And when you have the opportunity to plug a hole, theoretically, with one player, I mean, obviously it's better to do that with someone who's been in the league than someone who you're drafting, but those guys come at a cost. And cost, well, I don't think it's going to be as big of a deal for the 49ers as a lot of folks are making it out to be with the new Purdy contract. I really just don't think it's going to be an issue. They'll have to be a little more creative, but they're already pretty creative. They have tried to buy themselves out of problems. And I think almost universally, they have not been able to do that. The best players on this team are the ones that they have drafted or were given for effectively free by the Washington Commanders.
Right, right.
So,
and yeah, I keep coming back to just, I'll mention it one time and then that'll be it, Drew Dahlman. That's the one player I think they should go for. They can cut Jake Brendel and save $4 million after June 1st out of the $5 million cap hit next year. I don't think he even warrants that, but they might just keep – actually, that's 2025. So he's got 2 years left on his deal going forward.
I mean, I'm not even looking at the chat. It sounds like it's a hot mess. We're going to leave that be. We'll get to it later. Something else of note – very strong backing of Brock Purdy. Not exactly.
He can win us a Super Bowl.
He can win us a Super Bowl here. He's our guy.
Not that you'd expect him to say anything different, but
they were pretty emphatic about it. And on a day where they were pretty wishy-washy about everything, save for that they kind of, the Debo thing was sort of like,
we'll keep him.
But
right.
But in terms of, you know, the Brock thing, Brock wants to get it done soon. It does not sound as if there's any wishy-washiness. Not that we expected any, but there's not any wishy-washiness with Brock.
We'll see if they follow through on the not playing the games and just keep coming to the table early.
They've done it before. They did it with Christian McCaffrey. Christian said, I want this, and they said, sure. And I would venture to say that they feel same type of way about Brock Purdy.
That's a guess.
As for the Debo thing, it does seem as if people are some upset about this. It, I, I'm still adamant that they cannot have Debo in the same role next year.
Correct.
Unless he can prove that he can fulfill the prior role. I do think that he, of all the players on this team, is entitled to a down year in the same way that Kyle was entitled to a down year. The pneumonia thing, I don't think we've gotten the full story on that. But when you cut him post June 1, first, there's an opportunity cost on maybe being able to cut somebody else there.
Right.
Which
well,
is
no,
not
no,
going to
no,
be a high
no,
number.
No, there's not. You can cut as many guys post June. You can designate
That's
too
what
early.
I'm saying. But you want to be – this team, this organization wants to do the designation. So they're – Even
that's fair. With a guy like Debo, you
with a guy like Debo, you're not going to dick around and wait until after June 1st. That's why they created the designation. There was a lot of dicking around. The post June 1 designation shouldn't be used on anybody who's cheap, right? Or anybody who's a guaranteed roster guy.
And with them only saving $5 million by cutting him, it's like
that's my thought.
I'm not sure, but then there's like a void year. So
and this is why I think Debo signed the contract. I think he knew that it bought him another year. And there were moments for sure, maybe if he doesn't have the Miami game, we're having an acutely different conversation where it's like, I don't care, get him out of here. But so long as Kyle does not use Debo in the same role, the 21 to 23 role, okay, that's fine. You're paying him $10 million to go away or $15 million to stay. I think the $5 million is worth the gamble for this team, frankly. Given that they have a ton of salary cap space.
Yeah, I mean, it'll cost $16 million on the cap, but
okay,
they'd save $5
million. They'd save $5 million. It's $5 million more to have them than to get rid of them. And you're you know, it's a third. It's a third of the contract to keep them. That's the premium you're paying. You're paying 33% more to take a role, to take a risk. Like, I don't have a problem with that in general, given that this team shouldn't be putting talent out the door, and that Debo Samuel, I think, does deserve the opportunity to prove that this is a one-year blip.
Yeah, and
I don't think it is, but
well,
he deserves the opportunity.
Here's the thing with Debo. I think if you get a situation where you have Ricky Pearsall going forward, and he's has an off season and understands the offense a little bit better, like that's pretty valuable, and you don't have to pull, and you can move Jennings back to the slot, and you do have time to think about answers to man coverage. You can get McCaffrey back, whatever it is, whatever pieces there are, you can come up with schematic answers so you can get to zone coverage defenses more, where you can figure out an answer to man. If you do that, then you can dictate the terms and get back to the looks where Debo becomes a more valuable player. So that's how I look at that, and I think in realistically, he should be a rotational player. You should use him, view him as a running back. View him as your fourth wide receiver, depending on where Ayuk's at, and you know,
but,
see where that is.
And that's on Kyle. But I was encouraged, and again, the proof is going to be in the pudding. We're going to find out. But I was encouraged by a lot of the rhetoric from Kyle about making changes, right?
So
specifically when we talk about defense, right? And this is why I didn't press him too hard, because it felt like this was encompassing on the subject. My big gripe with Kyle this year is that it's not a cover three league anymore. It's a too high league. And it's not a 21 personnel league. 21 personnel and versatility across the board is fantastic if you're in a league that has plays cover three, because now you can isolate one safety on the top. You can challenge personnel groupings. Basically, you're forcing them to play either base or bring in the strong safety into the box or nickel. And so now you have the ability to sort of get the upper hand on these things. With so many defenses just going shell cover two, but mixing coverages and using motion and disguising stuff, something Sorensen never did, right? He was
vanilla.
He was second to last in blitz rate.
And their blitzes were really not effective.
And they were ineffective. There were three of them. Like, we know what his blitzes were. That's great start. And then they were 27th in pressure rate. So one of those two things had to be different. It's very difficult when you watch what Todd Bowles did with the Tampa defense, which is not particularly talented, but was chaotic. They were just doing stuff, and they would get some wins that way. They would give up 40 points sometimes that way, but they would do some stuff. Like, that's, you have to do errors of omission, not errors of, or sorry, commission, not errors of omission. And with Sorensen, it was a lot of errors of omission where he just didn't do anything. So
I'm with you.
But Kyle, along those lines, was saying, you know, everything has to adapt. Everything has to change. Quarterback is here, but we get some time to look at it. And I don't love the fact that they, I guess, never took the time to look at it in prior years.
Yeah.
Or at least as deep as they wanted to.
Yeah, I feel, yeah. I mean, this whole year, it felt like from the jump, not having the right guys. They just, we talked about it. It felt like they, McCaffrey would solve everything. And then when McCaffrey went out, it's like they just didn't have the answers, right? They just didn't have schematic answers when their trump card went out. And they didn't, and then he came back and didn't solve it, and then he got hurt.
Yeah.
So that's how it went. And then a lot of other things went wrong. But I do think they do need time to say, you know, when they people talk about the Super Bowl hangover in like broad terms, it's like physically, he was like, we yes. had 8 weeks from the Super Bowl when he had to come back to practice. And he was like, we were back,
yeah.
but no one was like, we were like, oh God, we're already practicing again. He's like, that's how we felt
right.
coming back for OTAs. So having, I think it's 14 weeks as opposed to eight.
That's too actually, much time. I think right, about 12.
Right,
about
where
right.
they can actually heal, rest,
yes.
evaluate in a way that they have not had the time to. Mm-hmm. Everything's just abbreviated from a coaching standpoint to like really answer these big questions.
Well, and also on top of that, they actually have time to do a proper personnel search, right? One of the reasons, how much of Nick Sorensen getting the DC job was, oh, Nick's here. You know, like,
yeah.
Do we want to fucking do this whole goddamn thing? It didn't work last time, so just Nick's here. Everyone likes Nick. Let's
yeah.
go with Nick.
And yeah,
that's one
because,
less thing
well,
to have
they,
to worry
they
about.
Were late
right?
to the cycle.
That's
they were
right.
late to the cycle. And that's kind of what he said. It was like we were late to the cycle. And so we had to just kind of go with what
just
was
there. Just
had to
go with what was there, which is, you know, listen, you don't have time to go to the grocery store because, you know, you overrun
yeah.
at work. You got to go with whatever's in the pantry.
We did have one.
We got a super
chat.
Okay,
from
here
Kim's
we go.
Dad.
Ken, solid to take the job. I really don't think he will.
I don't think he will either.
Now, I will say Olbrich.
And they have to wait until he flames out on the head coaching opportunities, of which I think he's considered for
Jacksonville.
One,
Jacksonville, for sure.
I want to say the Raiders, maybe.
He'd be a great hire for the Raiders, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't think Saleh takes the job. If I had to put money on it right now, I'd say it's Olbrich.
Me too.
I really don't think we should discount Staley.
I don't either. I think they should give it a wide berth.
I think they will. I think that Al Golden, the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, would be an outstanding hire.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned him before.
He worked with the Lions for a while, former head coach at Miami, former head coach at Temple. What he's doing with the Notre Dame defense is really impressive and very pro.
Yeah.
They have, you know, a certain style of athlete there that's very professional.
I think they need to maximize their corners, play more man coverage next mm-hmm. year, be more multiple in their disguises, in their pressure packages. It's just too predictable. I will say one thing we haven't mentioned. That was my last note.
Yeah.
They do want Greenlaw back, and the whole thing about, you know,
yeah,
people
as I
saw
suggested
on social media.
Yesterday, like, you have to prepare that way because most
right.
people are going to go on vacation for a
right.
long time. They might not see each other again.
Right.
They would regret not having a party.
Right.
I hate having to put my you know, go
right.
full
and
wag
and
on this, but
yeah,
like, come
and you're
on.
Gonna like cry because you're like, this could be over.
It's not just his neighbor, it's his best co-worker, best friend.
And right, and he's been here for 6 years.
Yeah,
so
they've done a lot together. So
yeah, I remember he came in when I was a rookie. We were both rookies together.
But his shot at a ring.
I mean, I think Saleh will. Yeah, I'm not saying Saleh wouldn't consider it.
I don't think Robert Saleh has any. I don't think he'll have any lack of it. So let me throw the Saleh thing pretty strictly here.
Yeah.
It would not behoove Robert Saleh to come back here for his career.
Because it's hard to bounce back and then.
So you get the Jets
get off
job.
The pedestal, yeah.
And everyone around the NFL knows it's not his fault. But he
right.
still got fired from that job. And the further away we go, the harder it will be to be like, hey, what happened here? Right? It's a gap on the
yep.
CV, right? So if he is to come back to San Francisco, what is he proving to anybody if he is now back in the running for head coaching jobs? Now, if he were to do it somewhere else, and again, it's not necessarily
yeah.
fair because it's not, but you get Fred Warner back, you get Nick Bosa back, and oh, well, now you have a great defense again. Like, have you proven that you can do that in an environment that's not San Francisco? All you've done in your career now has proven that you can be great in San Francisco, but we're not hiring you to be the head coach of San Francisco 49ers, though Grant Cohn would love that. It would be to be the head coach of the Cardinals or the Seahawks
right.
or whomever, the Bears, like name your team. So it would behoove Robert Saleh to do, I think, exactly what he's doing now, which is I'm now working for Matt LaFleur as an offensive consultant.
Right. Who is best man at his wedding. I think they were right. best men at each other's weddings, which also leads to a postseason after the Packers go out Robert Saleh helped a ton with our defense.
Totally.
He really brought some new ideas to the table.
With our offense. He works on the offensive side. So he has that, and he can stick around and do that. He can go take another DC job. I wouldn't be shocked if he tried to go get another offensive consultant job somewhere. If it's not with the Packers, it's with another
team. Those are kind of great jobs.
They're incredible jobs.
They're probably more fun than anything else out there.
And then when the head coaching cycle comes around next year, you go, hey, man, I've been spending all year studying Kevin O'Connell's offense inside and out. I got all the magic juice from that. I got all the magic juice from a great 49ers defense, which, by the way, sucked as soon as I left.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you thought D'Amico Ryan, look at his defense right now. Is he that good or did he just take what I got?
It's also the thing of that's how the 49ers and good teams promote is they take quality controls and they move them to the other side of the ball.
Yeah.
And it's also probably great as a defensive coordinator because you don't get that opportunity.
Well, Kyle,
so it's refreshing to see how offenses are actually viewing you.
That's it goes back to Kyle's first job out of college, where his dad calls up John Gruden and says, we're going to throw you on this team. And he threw him on Monty Kiffin's staff, the defensive coordinator, And that, and Kyle, this is still Kyle's tenet on how he builds his team.
Yeah.
In that he knows all the rules of the defense and he builds the offense around that.
Right.
The problem is Kyle built it around the rules of a cover three defense. And I don't think he's adapted enough to all the new things that are going on the defensive side.
I don't think so either. Weirdly, their last few games have looked the best.
Those are also the most vanilla defenses they played, right? And think about how well they did against the Bears and whatnot.
I mean, the Lions aren't vanilla at all.
Quick overview of topics. Three new coordinators. Clint Kubiak, perhaps we have the Andy Reid turn for Kyle Shanahan.
Just
maybe not.
Getting the at least nominal
He's going to get the Mike McDaniel title. We get to talk to him next year. Sorensen's out. We knew that. It's
They'll
official.
Try and keep him, but
They might move him to special teams.
We'll see.
Staley will get an opportunity to interview for the job, but I think Kyle wants Ulbrich is going to get Ulbrich. That's my guess. There are other good candidates.
Obviously,
I wouldn't
look
be terribly
Saleh.
Against Staley.
Schneider also out.
But that had to happen.
Personnel wise, Javon Hargrave post June 1 first cut. They are keeping Debo soft. That
didn't seem
feel
that soft.
We'll
He'll
see.
Be here next year. We're not in the business of letting good players leave.
Yeah, we'll see. I would expect he's back.
John Lynch's quote.
I know that's the quote. I'm saying you're not going to flat out say you're getting rid of Debo at this point. There's nothing in that behooves you to say that. I do think they keep him. I'm just saying I wouldn't say it's 100% he's back. I think that would be foolhardy. They want Greenlaw back. They're trying everything they can. We'll see.
We'll see on that one.
We'll see.
They haven't started that process yet, so any idea that there was a contract in place
to bunk. Brock, obviously they want to keep him. Seems like both sides are like, let's just
do this thing.
Let's hammer this thing out.
And honestly, it shouldn't be that hard unless Purdy is hell-bent on setting the market AAV because there are so many comps with Hurts and Love and
there's a lot of great deals out there.
One of these things is if there's reasonable parties, it really should never be that
hard. Like if I was Brock, I'd be like, sure, I don't care what the AAV is. Give me more guaranteed money than those guys.
Right. Or just give me the term. Let's renegotiate every year. Let's do the Patrick Mahomes deal.
Give me guaranteed money further down the line so it makes me harder to cut.
And we'll have a million hours.
I'll negotiate it.
I mean, honestly, I think we'd do a pretty good job. Trent Williams took longer, but apparently the ankle's taken a positive turn, so there's no concern about him moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, there is concern.
I mean, there's concern.
Because he's older and he keeps having ankle issues.
And it's one of the reasons they should consider a tackle, maybe not in the first round, but in the second.
They need a tackle.
They need tackles of all ilk. Left, right, defensive.
Yeah, didn't get any answers in defensive tackle. I asked a question, got probably the worst answer of the session.
And there was a whole little showdown. That was fun. That was a real blast.
Showdown?
Oh, Grant gave you He gave you a stare and a half, my friend.
Did he?
Oh, it was not very becoming.
I did not see that.
Apparently, we have a rivalry.
Well, we tried to both ask a question, and then he let me ask.
It got a little pissy. It got a little pissy.
Of course.
Not going to lie. It was a little bit of a dick.
I tried to ask it like five times in a row. It's annoying
and
when
so
when
was
you,
he.
Yeah. What?
Nope, not going to say it.
Go for it.
Nope, can't do it. Want to?
Nope.
I'll tell you as soon as this stops.
Go
can't
for it.
Can't do it. Has nothing to do with Grant. I promise you, it has nothing to do with Grant. It has everything to do with somebody else who is standing up there today. Anything else? Oh, you know, this is a little thing that I do think needs to be noted. kept saying that Brock is the leader of the team. And it didn't feel like it was empty calorie content.
I mean, that's what Kittle said in the locker room, is he was like, no, Brock actually spoke up.
These things matter. Like that is one of those, like, I know Fred's dragged a smidge, but not really. And like Bosa's dragged a lot, because is Bosa a leader on the team? Like on the field, sure, but he's not the rah-rah guy. Like, you need to be careful about the rah-rah guys. One of the first columns I wrote this season was like, this team doesn't have an identity other than they have Fred Warner and Brock Purdy. From that point on, anybody's guess. Right. And those were the only two guys who...
Yeah. No, it does feel sincerely like Brock, as a leader with comfortability in the offense and in himself, did step up. I'm interested in what his disposition is. I'm given that he's like learned from Kyle, I bet it's less of the rah-rah variety and more of like, hey, like, this is what this shit is.
Right.
Like, to the point. Earnestness, which probably plays better, you know, with the clean cut, like, how his disposition. You can't really be like, let's fucking,
it's very,
you know, like.
Drew Brees.
Right.
And I
think that archetype works. But the point is, in any motivation, it's a thing with, like, McDaniel. Like, you can't be fake. And being who you are, whether that's weird or outside of an archetype
can't
that's
be
familiar,
fake.
You just have to be earnest with who you are. And I think that's what that's reflecting.
The world knows phonies.
Anything else?
Okay, one little thing.
Yep.
They say they don't watch a lot of highlight films when it pertains to the draft.
Yeah.
But then they watch the Juwan Jennings highlight film and they're like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And that kind of seemed like what put it over the edge.
Yeah.
And I would... I did that.
This was neither, he was a seventh rounder.
No, I know. This was neither the venue nor the opportunity. But also, like, so you guys are just like breaking down a bunch of film, but like didn't notice those cool ass plays the first time?
I think.
Or did they draft them off a YouTube reel?
I think what that means
worked.
Is like they're watching tape of a lot of guys, and you can, when you're in like the seventh round and like, who is this guy? And someone's like, wait. I put up, like, when you see all the cut ups,
you're trying to make
and
your
And the
choice,
extended.
Yeah.
Like, not the silent, you know, when you see, like, the actual broadcast tape of Juwan Jennings being a maniac, that probably sways you a little bit. But I do hear what you're saying.
It's there was something I'm like, that doesn't seem like great process.
No.
I mean, and listen, seventh rounders, I can tell you, you know, firsthand.
You want to have something to cling on to. And if it's like, this dude's a psychopath, you can cling on to that.
It's a great, well, that's what
we're talking about. And I mean that as a compliment.
We talk about on day three, you're either playing for the tape, or you're playing for the athletic traits. If you're getting both of those on day three, that person should not be drafted because there's something horribly wrong with them. Like, if you have a player who has great tape and great athletic traits available and, like, played at Tennessee,
right,
and they're available on day three, like, they definitely,
you gotta,
like,
have
kill
something,
dogs
you
in
gotta
their
have
spare
something
time.
Wrong with somebody on
right.
day three.
That's like you have a terrible disease, or you've done a year in jail, or, you know.
Yeah, you got sandpaper knees.
Yeah, yeah, you're on your seventh ACL, yeah.
Right.
You don't have a left butt cheek. Like, these things are the things that matter. Let's go through real fast, get a couple of these in here. Or not. Modern-day Drew Brees is always my comp for Brock. Drew Brees wishes he could throw this far.
And Drew Brees couldn't move in the same way. It's more... It's a little Drew Brees, a little Russell Wilson.
So I don't mind. Ooh, hold on. Don't mind Mayo. I would say no to Pierce. He has some car dealership issues.
I'm not, and what his whole vibe is fucked up.
He's a weird dude. Mayo's a good guy.
We were in Vegas and we watched Antonio Pierce like signing autographs at the bottom of the
strange,
very weird,
strange guy. You can see why Mark Davis liked him. Thank you, Dieter, as always. get both Notre Dame coaches. They have great coordinators. Marcus Freeman's a hell of a coach. I have done a full 180 on Marcus Freeman.
Me too.
I'm looking forward to Thursday night immensely. I guess go Irish, because I really don't like Penn State. Anti-Penn State. You can look up what they did.
Yeah.
I know it's not their fault, but the new administration's fault.
Well,
but
all right.
Yeah. That or the Catholic Church, you know, pick your poison there. Stop running screen passes to Debo. Welcome to the chat. We've been doing this for months now, yelling the same thing. I'm not really sure what we're doing here. You guys seem like you had a great time, though.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Okay. I don't know what you guys are doing, but I think we're gonna.
There you go. Kyle was secretly the special teams coordinator.
Apparently,
he did a lot of harm. All right, that's it. We're going. Bye.